This Marketplace podcast is supported by Invest Puerto Rico. What's next in innovation? That's not the right question. It's where. Puerto Rico, more than just a tropical paradise, it's innovation's paradise, where startups and global players coexist in a vast and vibrant ecosystem, where talent runs deep, highly skilled, and bilingual. Plus, the island offers the most competitive tax incentives in the U.S. If you believe your business can go anywhere, Puerto Rico is the place. Find out more at investpr.org/marketplace. Again, that address is investpr.org/marketplace.
If at first you don't succeed...
Marketplace Morning Report is produced in association with the University of Southern California.
From American Public Media in Los Angeles, I'm Scott Jagow. The leaders of Detroit's car makers will try again to make their case before Congress today. They'll testify before the House Financial Services Committee. So far, Congress seems pretty resistant to a bailout, despite the pleas from GM CEO Rick Wagner.
What exposes us to failure now is not our product lineup, is not our business plan, is not our employees and their willingness to work hard, is not our long-term strategy. What exposes us to failure now is the global financial crisis.
Wagner says the collapse of the auto industry would lead to the loss of 3 million jobs and a total collapse of the U.S. economy. Marketplace's Janet Babin has more from North Carolina Public Radio.
The big three auto executives warned lawmakers that the cost of keeping the industry afloat would be far less than the price of fixing the economy if they go under. A report from Deutsche Bank backs them up. It found that if the big three were to go bankrupt, unemployment in the first quarter of 2009 would jump by almost 2%. GM is asking for $10 to $12 billion, while Ford and Chrysler won about $7 billion in government aid. The credit crunch and economic downturn have stalled auto sales across the board. Today, Toyota said it will shutter its North American factories for 2 days in December. This summer, it canceled all U.S. production of light trucks. Senate Democrats have proposed a $25 billion loan to the industry, but many lawmakers still aren't convinced. I'm Janet Babin for Marketplace.
Let's check on the stock markets. Small losses in Asia by the close. European shares are down 1% to 2% so far. But Wall Street's coming off gains. The Dow added 151 points yesterday, almost 2%. It's at 8424. The S&P 500 gained 1%, 8 points. And the NASDAQ climbed just 1 point. Today, the Food and Drug Administration opened its first office overseas, in China. It's an obvious choice considering the list of tainted food products coming out of China. I'm joined by our correspondent in Shanghai, Scott Tong. Scott, what's the FDA hoping to accomplish with this?
The point is for U.S. checkers of food to move past the borders, where traditionally United States officials check food coming in from China and other places. It's to go closer to where the point of origin is.
And is the FDA thinking this is the solution to the problem of tainted food and other products getting into this country?
Well, surprise, surprise, it's not going to be the silver bullet. China has something like 400,000 small food processors. I mean, they're little tiny plants and farms, and it's so fragmented. And so it's impossible for anyone to check every single one. So the risks will always be there. The hope is that these risks get minimized when the right people are involved.
And is this just a one-off with China, or is the FDA planning to expand this in other countries?
Oh, it's in a lot of places in the world. There will be three offices in China and India, in Europe, and Latin America. The point, as the FDA official said today, is to globalize the agency's mission, because more and more of what Americans eat comes from overseas. It's something like 15% of food that Americans eat is imported now. And as far as China's concerned, there is a China footprint, whether you know it or not, in a lot of aisles in the supermarket. It's vitamins, dietary supplements, processed foods, on and on. It's more globalized than most of us know. And the FDA is trying to keep up with that.
Scott Tong, our correspondent in Shanghai. Thank you.
Okay, Scott.
I bet you didn't know that today is World Toilet Day. Well, it is, according to the WTO, the World Toilet Organization. The WTO is based in Singapore, and it says a lack of toilets exposes millions of people to disease and fouls up the environment. The founder of the WTO hopes on this day people will practice toilet etiquette and think about the importance of toilets in their lives.
Marketplace Morning Report is supported by CSX, whose trains move a ton of freight 423 miles on 1 gallon of fuel to help reduce emissions. CSX, how tomorrow moves. And by Thomson Reuters, a source of intelligent information to businesses and professionals around the world. Thomson Reuters, knowledge to act. The Marketplace Entrepreneurship Desk is supported by the Kauffman Foundation of Kansas City, the foundation of entrepreneurship. Online at kauffman.org.
Lots of speculation about who will land positions in Barack Obama's cabinet. But Obama might also add some other positions into the mix, like czars. Commentator Will Wilkinson doesn't like that idea.
Remember America's can-do point man in the war on drugs, the so-called drug czar? Well, if you like czars, you'll love President-elect Barack Obama. He's proposing a new technology czar, he's considering a climate czar, and he's even floated the idea of a car czar. In tough times like these, America does not need a dose of tragic Russian authoritarianism. America does not need more czars. Did you know that the Constitution does not mention czars even once? I know, weird. The president's cabinet is composed of heads of various executive offices. These offices, like the Department of Education, are generally proposed by the president and approved by Congress. But the president can create new sub-cabinet-level offices more or less at will, which is where most so-called czars dwell. Since Nixon created the first energy czar in 1973, our government has become czar crazy. But why? Has a czar ever delivered anything more than the illusion that somebody's got things under control? Jimmy Carter bestowed upon America two inflation czars who then czared inflation to all-time highs. Reagan gave us the drug czar, and now that problem's licked. Czars and special new offices are mainly political theater, the equivalent of looking busy. But they can do harm. Czarmania is a symptom of the dangerous ongoing expansion of executive power. The idea that we need an executive branch czar implies that our democratic lawmaking bodies don't have sufficiently singular will to just get it done. Czars are too often a cosmetic reaction to problems government itself created. Politicians promise much, but government too rarely delivers. In the end, it's the innovation and enterprise of private citizens, not a swarm of pint-sized Caesars, that really delivers the goods.
Will Wilkinson is a research fellow at the Cato Institute. What do you think? Share your thoughts with us at marketplace.org. In Los Angeles, I'm Scott Jagow. Thanks for listening, and enjoy your day.
American Public Media.
The world can be a confusing place for kids, and finding the words to explain it all can be tricky, too. Introducing Million Bazillion, a Webby-winning podcast from Marketplace that takes your kids on exciting adventures to answer the awkward and complex questions they have about money. Each week, we tackle hard-hitting inquiries from kid listeners like,
what is a college account and how does it work?
I want to know what unions are and what they are for.
Why does the U.S. have so much gold in Fort Knox and what do they use it for?
Help your kids understand how money fits into the world around us. Listen to Million Bazillion wherever you get your podcasts.